I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this month, a federal jury in Philadelphia ruled against City Councilman Kenyatta Johnson, who had prevented developer Ori Fibush from buying and developing two city-owned lots in Point Breeze. Fibush said he was being punished for running against Johnson, and it looks like the jury agreed. At issue was something called councilmanic prerogative, the longstanding practice in Philadelphia that gives members of City Council the right to control development and land use decisions within their district. Now, it's not codified in any law. It's more of a Philadelphia tradition. So, is it time to rethink, reform councilmanic prerogative? We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Larry Platt is co-founder and editor of the Philadelphia Citizen. Larry, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be back.
Also with us is Frank DiCicco, a former Philadelphia City Councilman. He represented the 1st District. He's now working as a lobbyist. And Frank DiCicco, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. How would you define for our listeners, Frank DiCicco, what councilmanic prerogative is? And I hate to begin an interview with a definition, but I want to make sure we all know what we're talking about here.
Well, I think you have to basically see what the proposal is by a developer, as an example. A developer may come in and want to build a high-rise in a particular community. When I was a council person, the first thing I would tell a developer was, whether I was for the project or not, go meet with the community. See what their concerns might be. Let's see if we can work things out. And then come back to me. In many cases, and I use this as an example, there's hardly any development that can happen in Philadelphia without someone being against it. I always said if someone proposed to build a convent in a neighborhood, there would be opposition because it was too quiet.
So, this is Philadelphia.
This is Philadelphia.
We're talking Philadelphia,
right?
Here.
So the developer may come back and say that he or she has had some outstanding issues with the community. I would involve myself with those neighbors to see if we can find a resolution. No one gets 100%. Hopefully, at the end of the day, there's a compromise where the community would be willing to sign off with certain provisos. Something maybe to do with the structure of the building, the size and shape, and some of the materials, because they're concerned because they don't want something to be sticking out like a sore thumb, if you will, in that community. They want some development that'll complement their community. I know there's always been opposition to the councilmatic prerogative from the general public,
yep.
But I think you need to talk to people in those neighborhoods where the councilmatic prerogative has worked to the community's advantage and to the developer's advantage as well.
What Frank DiCicco, Larry Platt is describing is a negotiation process. And I think critics of councilmanic prerogative see it as much more the member of city council basically dictates what's happening within their district. How do you see this?
Well, what it is, councilmanic prerogative is a longstanding tradition, a gentleman's agreement among city council members and to in which the district council members have inordinate power over development in their individual districts. So there are 10 district members, and they have inordinate power over what gets built, over what the city ultimately looks like. And it is not codified in any law. So it is a tradition that invites public corruption. Because, all you have to do is look at our history. We've had at least 3 city councilmen go to jail because of the scourge of councilmatic prerogative. You had Lee Beloff, George Schwartz, Rick Mariano, and I think 3 others. Because the problem with it is because there's no transparency, because it's basically development, ad hoc development by backroom deals, you get situations where there are quid pro quos. To where a councilman, if we could back up for a second.
Go ahead.
See, I think it's fair to say, Councilman DiCicco might disagree with me, but over the last few decades in Philadelphia, most city council members have had the best job they're ever going to have in their lives. 6-figure salary, a car, 23 weeks off. I mean, that's pretty cushy. There is a desperation to keep yourself elected, right? In a one-party town, and so councilmanic prerogative enables these de facto legal corruption, because It's the old scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You want to develop in my district, you either contribute to my campaign or you contribute to my pet causes. And that's the way this has actually worked over the years, and there's no check on it.
Hmm. How do, what do you say in response to that?
I disagree on the 23 weeks off, but because council may not be in session, but trust me, as a district council person in particular, you're never off. I have 14, 15-hour days, and I'm not exaggerating, especially if you have a busy district.
But what about this idea of the potential for corruption?
I think there's a potential for corruption in anything you do. I mean, if you hold yourself up to a certain standard, you don't have to worry about that. I mean, I came from a district. Larry mentioned a few council persons who preceded me who did get jammed up and went to jail. I always pride myself in saying that I did 4 terms without having ever been indicted. So
that is an accomplishment.
It is an accomplishment. There's no question about it. And by the way, for 8 years, I gave up a car. So I don't want to deal with picking my mother up and somebody saying you're using a city car to pick your mom up to take her to a doctor. If it's done, in my opinion, if it's done in a transparent, open way, as I suggested earlier, developer comes in, go see the community, let's see what their issues are, try to work it out. I think one of the best examples I can give you is when the casinos were being proposed in Philadelphia. There were 5 applicants. 4 of the applications were in my district. The other one was out in former Councilwoman Miller's district. I knew mathematically that I was going to get one because the state was going to allow 2 in Philadelphia. Before the state made its decision, I began a series of community meetings up and down the central Delaware waterfront where those casinos were being proposed. And I introduced the casino developers to the various community groups up and down the river. And I actually said at one point, I know I'm going to have one in my district. I would suggest if I had a pick today, I would pick the Sugar House site. And I said that to the folks at the northern end because I thought it was going to be the least disruptive in terms of traffic and quality of life. Ultimately, the gaming board, for whatever their wisdom was, decided to have both in my district, Foxwood site at Delaware and Reed and the one where the current Sugar House is. I immediately put up a red flag and said, no way is this going to happen without a process. So I would use Councilmatic prerogative as a process. Community, you can talk to the folks down in Queen Village, Pennsport.
They called into our show.
Society Hill. And ask them if they support Councilmatic prerogative.
Because you feel like you use that to keep Foxwoods.
Yeah, and I think this is important. I understood the revenue issues for the city, $25 million upfront licensing fee, non-returnable. I was in the unenviable position, I guess you call it, to have to do legislation known as Commercial Entertainment District, CED legislation, that allows for a casino. I held that bill from being introduced. My colleagues, the other 16, kept saying, we really can use the money, we need the jobs, and I fully appreciate that. I said, yes, but yes. Until I am certain that the community would support it and we can deal with those quality of life issues, I will never move this bill. Ultimately, the Supreme Court took over after a couple of years and made the decision for the community.
So I think that Councilman DiCicco deserves credit for being transparent during his reign as a councilman about in his use of Councilmatic prerogative. But the electorate should not be in the position of hoping for a councilman of Frank's honesty and forthrightness. We should have a system that demands that of all our council people. And that is not what we have. And that's not what other cities who practice this have. In Chicago, which also practices, I think they call it legislative cooperation or some other euphemism. But 12 aldermen have gone to jail because it is a system that operates in the shadows.
I mean, let me just pick up on what you're sounds like what you're saying, Larry, is this gentleman's agreement allows each member of city council to kind of figure it out for themselves. What sounds like what you're calling for is more uniformity, more openness, more transparency.
More uniformity, more openness, more transparency, and also a balancing of the scales. We have a system whereby the district council people have disproportionate power. And this gets to the bigger issue of who we want to be as a city. Do we want to be one city? Do we want to have a vision for what we are as a city? Or do you want 10 different fiefdoms all practicing their own form of development, their own form of planning? What this does is it the practice of this renders planning and zoning to a lower rung than it is in other more functional cities like Portland or Austin, Texas.
Frank, let me just raise this. The Pew Charitable Trust took a look at Councilmanic prerogative about a year ago, and what they found was that there were 730 prerogative bills passed over a certain time period. I think it was 5 to 6 years, and 726 of them without opposition. So four out of 730 bills, there was absolutely no opposition, essentially saying that city council gives a green stamp – or is it a green stamp? Yes.
A green light.
There you go. A green light to whatever a member of city council comes up with. There's no kind of back and forth.
There is, for the most part, that is somewhat accurate. The other council people generally will yield to the district council person because they feel that that district council person understands that community better than anyone, because you represent them. I remember one of my former colleagues was holding up the development of the Youth Study Center. And I thought we should be moving this thing along. It's something that's very important. But I also understood that this council person has a community that had certain concerns. Again, if you live a half a block away from a high-rise development where there's never been a high-rise development before, you live in a three-story row house, you're concerned about the density, the traffic, vehicular traffic, what this place will look and feel like, because it may impact negatively. It could impact negatively your quality of life. The district council person, in my opinion, is the first and last line of defense to hopefully work with the city, as Larry said, and the planning commission to come up with a plan that at least meets not everyone, because you're never going to get 100%,
right,
but the majority of the people can feel comfortable about this project getting built in my neighborhood.
Hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break. And yes, we are talking about Councilmanic prerogative in this hour of Radio Times. It's something that has come up time and time again here in Philadelphia. And it's a longstanding practice. It gives members of city council the right to control a lot of development, a lot of land use decisions within their district. And there is some pushback on it. And we invited Larry Platt to join us. He's co-founder, editor of the Philadelphia Citizen. Also with us is Frank DiCicco, former Philadelphia City Councilman. He represented the first district, which has had a lot of development in it. He's currently working as a lobbyist, and we want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Frank DiCicco and Larry Platt about councilmanic prerogative, the use and potential abuse of councilmanic prerogative, and the role that it has been playing in the city's development. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Larry, I know you wanted to say something, but let me quote a couple of members of city council. This is from the Philadelphia Inquirer, I believe. This is Maria Conona Sanchez says, "We are the ones who are entrusted to know what the issues are and sometimes make better decisions on the better interests of the district than the folks that you know, don't like this councilmanic prerogative." Councilman Curtis Jones, I'm never going to abuse it. I'm going to put it to use in my best use in my district. These are elected members of city council, so they got the most votes. They represent their district. Why not give them this authority?
Right. Their argument is we're accountable to the voters. Unfortunately, no one is really accountable to the voters in a corrupt one-party town with historically low voter turnout. Most of the electorate in Philadelphia, evidence shows, the voter turnout rolls show, has basically felt helpless and at the whim of the political establishment, not engaged in some kind of partnership with the political establishment. So I think it's a.
But is that prerogative's fault?
Well, I think it's part of it though. I mean, I think there are big forces at work that keeps the electorate from being a true partner in governance. So I would say that look, if this councilmanic prerogative practice, this shadow practice, was so beneficial, why was Council President Clark on TV a week ago saying, "Well, I don't really know what councilmanic prerogative is. I never heard of that." That was an insult to the intelligence of the of the citizen of Philadelphia. What this really is a political gravy train, and so Councilman DiCicco brought up. Let's take a case study. Brought up Councilwoman Blackwell's issue with the juvenile detention center, which held up.
This is the Barnes.
Which held up the Barnes moving into the city for a good number of years. There's a case where councilmanic prerogative worked, and what she ultimately got was a community center in West Philly named after her husband. There's a case where councilmanic prerogative worked against the common good, right? And that's the balance that is off, that the disproportionate power to these individual districts can work against the common good of Philadelphia.
But what's wrong with it, no matter who it's named after, what's wrong with a community center in negotiation with the Barnes Foundation?
Well, they weren't in negotiation with the Barnes Foundation. They were in negotiation because to bring the Barnes Foundation to Philadelphia, you had to move the juvenile detention center.
Yes, right.
So it is, and this is what the lawyer for Ori Feibusch talked about, that the theory is that's a Fifth Amendment violation, that there actually is a case there because there would be a case because consistent with the takings clause of the Constitution, which is that you can't say I need B to get A in a matter of public land disposition.
Well, I mean, what we're talking about here looks like some degree of negotiation. Does that bother you, Frank DiCicco?
No, as long as it's done in the full view of the public, I think it's a good tool. As Councilwoman Sanchez mentioned, we are the first and last line of defense. I think maybe I said that, but we're both talking about the same thing. You know, I understand, and Larry makes some valid points. And I was the author of the Zoning Code Commission. And I did that because I was concerned that maybe I, as a councilperson, might have had too much influence. I'm not a developer. I'm not an architect. I'm not a designer. Does the building have too much brick? Does it need more glass? I mean, those are some of the nuances that you go through when you do development. And I figured that if we did change the code, got the code to where modern day materials and construction procedures are, that maybe we can do a better job and not take council members out of it completely, but kind of minimize. And I took some criticism when I introduced that bill, which became a referendum and was supported by the city.
But has that changed councilmanic prerogative at all?
I don't know if it has changed it to the degree that I thought it would, to be perfectly honest with you. And again, I guess because I think I did a pretty good job, and it was 16 years, I had a 70% approval rating when I left, and I think it was because I was paying attention. So I look at councilmanic prerogative as a tool that helps the city and the people who live in a particular neighborhood to be able to pay attention and have a process. I always used it as a process, not a quid pro quo. Well, maybe I'm wrong on that. There may have been a quid pro quo. Maybe it said, we would like more trees in this neighborhood, and if we're going to support this project, would you be willing, as Mr. Developer, to plant trees or put pedestrian lighting in? I did that in Wash West. A lot of the pedestrian lighting there is as a result of some compromise and understanding on behalf of the developer and the community. Community may not have liked entirely what was being developed, but they can live with it. So you know what? In return, let's plant some trees and do some pedestrian lighting, which made the project actually better at the end of the day.
Go ahead.
Well, you asked a question about the zoning code was rewritten in 2012, and then and in 2013, legislation was passed for a land bank. And in both cases, what should have been reform actually only kept councilmanic prerogative.
How so?
The land bank. Let's take the land bank, which in other cities streamlines the process of the disposition of public land, right?
And there's a lot of vacant public land.
There's 40,000 vacant lots. There's 10,000 city-owned vacant lots. So land bank is a great idea. It took like 3 years after the legislation passed to even get it up and running. But that said, it's a great idea. However, it did not take councilmanic prerogative out of the equation. In fact, it kind of codified it by having this council president appoint someone, I forget the name, it's some advisory committee position, some euphemism for apparatchik. And that position does the bidding and can veto or hold anything. Like right now, I believe Council President Clark has 100 holds on the sale of city lots. No one knows why. Hmm. No one knows who they're being held for. It's a shadow system.
What about the idea, though, of if you're going to have councilmanic prerogative, codify it? I mean, make it less at the discretion of a member of city council and more like this is the way we do things in Philadelphia, and we're going to abide district by district.
I don't know if you can codify it. I really don't know. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not sure how that could be. You can get to that point. Look, I think we'll probably in 5 years, if you invite me back and Larry, I think we'll still be having this conversation. I mean, honestly, and it's not because, you know, people don't want it to be better. It is what it is. And we can say it could lead and has in the past led to some nefarious situations where people have gone to jail because they've used it as a quid pro quo. You'll have to hope that you elect people whose standards are going to be transparent, and they're going to do everything they can to do the best in the interest of the people that they represent. I just don't know. And again, maybe there is a way of codifying. I can't figure that out at all. But people will make decisions, and the developers will always decide whether they want to go to the Zoning Board of Adjustment to have a case heard, where it could obviously be challenged by an individual and tie up development for at least 2 years in the Court of Common Pleas, or go by way of legislation, which means you go to the district council person. Now, is there another way of doing it in city council where maybe it's a body that – well, there is a body of 17 people, but maybe
exactly.
There's a subgroup? I don't know. I never even gave that any thought. But a developer who goes to a district council person for that council person's support on a project – goes there for a number of reasons, and one is, and I think it works to the advantage of the community as opposed to the zoning board. I'm not knocking the zoning board. It does have its role. But on certain projects, doing it by way of legislation protects the community because it is now the law. You can't get approval to build a high-rise of X amount of feet, so many units in it, if it's codified by way of legislation – and then flip that property to another developer, and the developer can come in and decide to change it. That doesn't happen. There's a trigger there. You either build it the way you've been given the approval, the green light to build it, or you got to come back with a whole new project.
And legislation meaning the city council signs off on
yes,
it.
Yes, correct.
Very quickly, and then
sure.
We'll get some more callers. So
sure.
Get some callers in.
The diabolical genius of councilmanic prerogative is that it is not codified in law. It's a gentleman's agreement. You can't reform it with legislation because you've got people saying, like Council President Clark, well, it doesn't really exist. I don't know what it is. It's sort of, you know, my hat's off. It's genius, which is why this court case with Ori Feibusch against Councilman Kenyatta Johnson is so interesting to me, because if it starts and that was a First Amendment claim, right, that Councilman Johnson used councilmanic prerogative against a political opponent to silence a political opponent, violating his First Amendment rights. If that starts a precedent of developers suing city council members, that could have a practical effect of ameliorating the power of this privilege?
Well, I'm looking at the front page of the Philadelphia Citizen. Wanted: developers to sue city council. Let me just reintroduce the two of you, and I do want to get some folks in on the conversation. We are talking about something called councilmanic prerogative. It's unique to Philadelphia, and it has to do with members of city council having a lot of control about development projects and land use within their districts. And Larry Platt is co-founder and editor of the Philadelphia Citizen. Frank DiCicco, a former member of Philadelphia City Council, currently working as a lobbyist. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. It doesn't get more wonky than councilmanic prerogative. That's what we do here on Radio Times. Let me get Raven from Southwest Philadelphia to join us. Raven, go ahead. You're on the air.
And blessings to everyone.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. I'm currently working with Councilman Johnson on a personal thing that happened a few years ago where we spoke about developing the Southwest neighborhood personally for the community. And this doesn't have to exclude developers, but it's just when you have developers scouting a neighborhood, they're not concerned with the citizens. They're not knocking door to door and talking to the citizens and seeing what are the needs of the citizens and how can they be a useful asset in that neighborhood. All they see is this is a perfect spot for my business. So therefore, when you have a residential area that is in a current collapsing situation because either the children have not obtained what the parents left, so on so forth, and you have a lot of people who are not able to speak for themselves, therefore they go to their councilman to have them advocate for them. You have situations where a developer comes in, sees that there's not many people to fight, and will do a land grab incomplete and give them a paycheck and tell them to move like they're an Indian on a reservation.
Well, you know what, Raven, you're making a point for councilmanic prerogative, the use and how developers can be scoping a certain area. I'm looking at you, Larry Platt, and basically dismissing whatever neighborhood concerns there might be.
No, I think these are...
I do agree with the transparency.
Sure.
May I continue?
Okay.
There is a big problem with the transparency, and it's a big problem with passing the torch, where we got too many people holding the seat too long, not enough economic education, so when these children graduate out of high school, they can take these seats and keep the community involved.
Fair enough. You put a lot of stuff on the table, all important, Raven. Go ahead, Larry, and then we'll get Frank DiCicco to weigh in.
No, I think those are really important points, and I agree that there needs to be a referee over the changing face of the city, right? Over changing demographics, when it comes to gentrification in neighborhoods and so forth. In more functional cities, that referee is our professional urban planners, planning commissions.
Like a city planning commission?
Right. Zoning laws and rules and regulations. They're not, it's not a system, a shadowy system of elected officials who may or may not have the community's best interest at heart. It's playing Russian roulette. If we had 17 Frank DiCiccos, this would be a different conversation.
Well, and I wonder, just picking up on several things that you've said to you, Frank DiCicco, which is that, yes, a particular project might have a direct impact on a community, but a lot of these projects affect the city as a whole, Sugar House being, I think, a perfect example of that. And the fact that a member of city council has so much power over what happens within the district, and do they consider what it might do to the city or the region as a whole?
Yeah, and before I get to that, I just want to say regarding Councilman Kenyatta Johnson and the Ori Feibusch case, I'm not familiar with all the particulars in it, but it's my understanding that Councilman Johnson had supported a number of projects that Ori Feibusch had presented in prior to this issue. So with all due respect to Councilman Johnson, it isn't like he just put up a red flag and you're never going to build because you ran against me. They did support those projects. Would you repeat that question?
Yeah, no, I was just thinking the fact that, sometimes
the interest of the city versus a big project
can have a gigantic impact.
Well, I think I've mentioned something to that effect earlier when I talked about the casino. It was a $25 million upfront licensing fee, construction jobs, permanent jobs. They all impact the city. And I certainly was one of the key – I was always pride myself on being one of the key proponents of development in the city when I sat in city council. But you got to go back to, again, if you live – in close proximity to a development, whether it's casino, whether it's a multifamily dwelling, your quality of life is going to be impacted. And who do you go to? And Larry, you did mention some things about in other cities. We do have a planning commission. A developer comes, and even if with the support of a district council person, the planning commission weighs in, the art commission, the historical commission, depending on where the development is. So there are checks and balances. At the end of the day, I will admit, that the council person
they all
does
defer
have
to the council
final.
Person. They all defer.
But they do weigh in. And I just worked on a project with a developer in Wash West, 6 months, dealing with the community issues as a lobbyist. And we went to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission weighed in and gave us its recommendations on how they thought the project would feel better, for lack of a better way of describing it. The developer took those into consideration and made the changes. The community was happy. Developer was happy. Councilman Squill, it was in his district, supported the legislation.
We're almost having a break here, Larry, but is it the holds that concern you, the idea that a councilman can prevent a project or that they can greenlight it?
Well,
or a combination, depending on what the project is.
Well, it's that. It's the holds. It's the not knowing what the rationale is behind this public discussion. And it's also the invitation to corruption. We live in a city. I mean, the headlines are overwhelming lately. It feels like public corruption is getting worse, not better, despite our best efforts at campaign finance reform and so forth. So that's a real issue.
Well, I want to pick up on that after our very short break, and we are talking with Larry Platt and Frank DiCicco about something called Councilmanic Prerogative here in Philadelphia. Its impact on development projects, on land use battles, 1-888-477-9499. You can call us like Raven. Raven, thanks for the call. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about councilmanic prerogative. Try saying that three times fast. It's a practice in Philadelphia. It goes back decades, and it gives members of city council nearly complete control over development projects in their districts. The Pew Charitable Trust looked at councilmanic prerogative last year, described it like this: I won't mess with your turf if you won't mess with mine. And the tradition has come under fire after a battle over a project in Point Breeze. And we are talking with our guest, Larry Platt, co-founder and editor of the Philadelphia Citizen, and Frank DiCicco, a former member of Philadelphia City Council who used councilmanic prerogative. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Larry, you wanted to say something.
You know, it just this is a complicated issue.
Yes, it
because
is.
Because we want to guard against Philadelphia, the Upper East Sideification of Philadelphia, right? We want to make sure there's affordable housing, and that we manage gentrification in a smart way. And part of Councilman Johnson has done that a lot in his district.
And part of
his argument in this case was that that's what it was about. The jury rejected that that argument, but that was his argument. And I think, you know, what we all I'm saying, and all the sort of the good government types, wonky types that I talk to are saying, is there's a better way than a shadowy, you know, non-transparent invitation to corruption that as a longstanding tradition than councilmanic prerogative.
When you say non-transparent, you've said that several times. Is that sort of a backroom deal, closed doors? You know, I don't think maybe vape-filled room.
Exactly. I mean, you know, there are all these holds on vacant lots right now. We don't know why. We don't know who they're being held for. We don't know if the people who they are being held for have made campaign contributions. You just don't know. That is no way to run a city.
Well, you would know about campaign contributions because you have to file a report, which is can be somewhat taxing on us at times. But
can you connect the dots?
Exactly.
There?
You. I think you could. I mean, I was accused once by a group that I was supporting a outdoor billboard sign because I had gotten a contribution from a billboard company, which I did, in full disclosure. But if you look at the contribution versus what the developer was going to make, I mean, it wasn't like I didn't change my mind because I did it in full view. I supported billboards in some neighbors, and I rejected them in other neighborhoods. Again, it had more to do with the people who were going to be immediately impacted than anything else. But I don't know, Larry. You know, you, like I said, I think maybe 10 years from now we'll come back. We'll still be having the same conversation.
10 years from now, I don't know where I'll be. I'll probably be 6 feet under.
I might be fully retired by that time. But
if I'm here 10 years from now, shoot me.
You mentioned the progressives and or the wonks and all. Do they have a solution? Do they have any recommendations?
Well, I think, again, the problem is I don't think there's an easy legislative answer to something that is not legislative in the first place. That's the problem. It's sort of this ingenious, diabolical thing to say, oh, it's just a tradition.
Isn't it really the way government works when you think about it? Take Philadelphia Council out of it for a moment. I'm just sitting here thinking, many, many years ago, former Senator Sam Franny blocked the Crosstown Expressway, which was proposed for South Street.
I remember that well.
That would have probably been – we probably would not have a neighborhood called Queen Village and Society Hill today. God only knows what it would have been. Now, is it senatorial prerogative? Call it what you want. He stood up against the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. The Department of Transportation said, over my dead body, will you ever be permitted to put a Crosstown Expressway down the center of South Philadelphia?
Well, but in that case, he was consistent with my point about serving the common good, and maybe only to us in retrospect now. But even at the time, the good government types agreed that was at least potentially troublesome.
So only if the good government types agree, then we move forward. I don't know.
Well, but what I'm saying,
we're paid to make decisions as elected officials.
Well, let me quote you, Larry. This is going back to the Philadelphia Citizen. You say our history is replete with the deleterious effects of this practice, like when Councilman Brian O'Neill held up an $800 million expansion of Fox Chase Cancer Center in his Northeast District because he wanted Fox Chase to fund a community fund. It didn't complicated reasons. It didn't work out. But is that a bad thing?
Well, it's a bad thing when ultimately development deals that would serve the common good, expand the tax base, create jobs, don't get done, right? Because of shadowy internecine political infighting, where you don't know the motives. Transparency, sunlight is the best disinfectant.
You keep using the word shadowy, and I don't want to get into debate with you, but here it is. We're talking about cases that are in the public's view. We know why he was holding it up. So, you know, there's shadowy stuff, I guess, that goes on, and like I said, in any business deal. Putting politics aside.
Let me get some callers on, and we got a bunch of comments as well. This is Jonathan from the Art Museum area. And Jonathan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say I can appreciate what the councilman is saying about protecting the impact of large developments in a community. But what about the other side? You know, the small developer and, you know, his or her project. I'm a very small developer, and I do a few projects a year. I had a case where I wanted to rehab a vacant building, use it exactly as it was used prior to it being abandoned. We weren't adding anything. We weren't taking anything away. I presented to the community, and no major issues were. You know, they had no major issues with the project. We were on the same page. When I went to the councilman for his sign-off, I was told that I would have to make a quote-unquote voluntary contribution to an organization that had nothing to do with the project at the neighborhood.
Jonathan, did this happen recently?
It happened 4 years back, 5 years back.
And is this member of council still a member of city council?
They still are, yes.
They still are. Frank DiCicco, you're kind of
grimacing,
nodding your head there.
Yeah, and let me back up a minute. When I talk about development, I did use big development, but I think this also applies to small development as well. I don't mean to suggest if you're a developer and you do two or three houses a year and you flip them and make a profit, I'm on your side as well. But I'm also on the side of the community. I mean, I live in South Philadelphia, 11th Federal. I'm a third generation on that block. And I've seen a lot of things change in my community. I remember when I first got elected to city council, I worked with the Planning Commission on doing a total remapping of my district in the southern end. And then eventually we did the rest of the district. The remapping was to remove, as a matter of right, conversion of single-family dwellings into multifamily. If anyone is familiar with South Philadelphia, south of Snyder in particular on the west side where people triple park, put their phone number on their dashboard to call me if you need to get out of your parking. I didn't want to see that happen on the east side, the side that I represented. There were developers. There were realtors who wanted to hang me by my toes. Well, I was stopping development. I was creating hardships for them. Ultimately, I think we saved neighborhoods in the true term of what we call neighborhoods, protected as many of the single-family dwellings, and property values in that neighborhood are going through the roof.
Jonathan, let me ask you a question. So you were asked by this member of city council to make a contribution to some kind of organization unrelated to what you were doing. Did you do it?
At the end of the day, financing for the project fell through. And I did not know.
I hear stories like Jonathan's all the time from both big and small developers. I think it happens, the phraseology of voluntary contribution, that's very purposeful. And I think it happens way more frequently than we think. And the reaction when this is talked about by the political class is reminiscent of Captain Renault in Casablanca when he walks into Rick's place and says, "I'm shocked to find that there's gambling going on in this establishment."
But I'm parsing things here. I mean, the council person didn't ask for the money directly for them.
Right.
They asked for the money to fund some other hopefully worthy project.
Right. That's part of the genius of Councilmatic prerogative.
You see, this is Councilmatic prerogative, Frank DiCicco?
Again, I don't know. I'm only hearing, what that gentleman is saying. There may be more to it. Maybe there isn't. I don't want to comment because I don't know all the facts.
Right.
I mean, it may be some council people may say, listen, I'd like to help you and I'm going to help you, but we have a Boys and Girls PAL Center. And, would you be willing to make a contribution? Is it a quid pro quo? I guess if you want to think of it that way, it is, but it's for the good of the community. If you're developing in a neighborhood, you're making an investment. You want it to be a neighborhood where your return is going to be good on the investment, and keeping that neighborhood intact and maybe a PAL center is part of the fabric of that community. I can talk about this stretches as far as I want. It's not a bad thing to make a contribution.
Jonathan, I appreciate the call. Larry, anything you want to
add? Well, I was just going to say, I'm not arguing that it is illegal. I don't think there is a quid pro quo in that scenario or in many others. It's just not good governance. It's just because it makes us, the electorate, fervently have to hope and pray that we elect people with good intentions instead of having a system that guarantees positive common good outcomes.
Let me read a comment from Mike. He says, bottom line is, if you want to purchase land or get involved in development, you have to pay to play. This has never changed. Now, there was this great scandal about pay to play, and there were some reforms that are brought in. Do you think that has changed things, or do you think it's business as usual, Frank DiCicco?
Again, I'm speaking for myself, and I think the majority of my colleagues, presently and former. I'm not aware of it. If someone treats you as a developer in that fashion, there are mechanisms and there are places you should go speak, have a conversation.
Huh.
And again, as I said, look, if you do it by way of ordinance, it's public hearings. People come in and testify for or against the project. So something's going to happen either way. If there was a quid pro quo, not in a wink, I'll get you this for that. There are opportunities for that person to go to the appropriate authorities, as has happened in the past.
Larry, let me go back to you and just acknowledge all the development that's been going on in the city. I mean, some in some neighborhoods more than others. Is this a sign that Councilmanic Prerogative is working? Because we see the revitalization of a lot of communities, a lot of neighborhoods.
No, I would say, actually, let me send some props out to Frank here, because I would say that a lot of these cranes are the result of legislation that he passed, the tax abatement, and I'm interested, and Councilman Dom is now talking about extending that tax abatement into the neighborhoods, which I think would be really interesting. I think that's really that, and let's not make the mistake of thinking that private enterprise results from policy. It's policy has to react, I think, to entrepreneurs who dream big, and that's one of the things that's happening in this city. But when you talk to those entrepreneurs, like Jonathan,
right,
what you hear is that the government is making it harder for me, not easier, to positively impact the community.
What do you think about that, Frank?
Well, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. I just have a hard time with this because people see politicians generally see politicians in a not-so-nice light, and they figure that we're all on the take and we're all doing, one or two get indicted, get sent to jail, 30 other politicians fall under the same cloud, if you will. I still believe that there are the majority of people who run for office are dedicated people who really care, and this may not be the best process, as Larry and maybe if there's a better way, I think somebody ought to present it, and maybe city council will take it up. Maybe they won't, but it is what it is. And protecting a neighborhood, protecting the interests of the people who elect you in return, yes, you do hope to get reelected. Mm. But if that's the quid pro quo, no harm is done.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the – I've spent more years than I care to remember writing about public officials. And the vast majority, I have to say – do have the kind of intentions and conscience that you're talking about, Councilman Chico. I'm just in favor of a system that does its best to limit the bad acting.
I'll give you an example. The flip side of the casino, and it escaped my mind for a moment, senior moment, I apologize. All those years of fighting the casino, Randell becomes the governor. He wasn't talking to me because he was upset that I wasn't moving the legislation. I get a call on a Sunday morning in August. I forgot what year it was. And he finally calls me and says, I'd like to have a conversation with you. I said, well, fine. After 3 years, I've been trying to reach you. We're going to have a conversation. I said, what is it about, Governor? He said, would you consider putting the CED legislation, Commercial Entertainment District legislation, on at the a gallery site? Absolutely, I said. I know I'm going to get grief from Chinatown and some of the other communities. But I personally believe that is something I think they'll kickstart development on East Market Street. I introduced the bill. I had a police escort getting me out of Holy Redeemer Church one night because the Chinatown community, which were my constituents and had supported me in every election, didn't want it there. I wanted to begin to have a conversation with them. It never took place because the Gaming Commission said you can't move the license. If you do, everybody else who didn't get the license has to be part of the process. So I tell you that because I'm going to fast forward. The Golden Bird Group were one of my clients. They own a parcel at 8th and Market. They were one of the more recent applicants for the license that Foxwood didn't get. I went out and started having conversations with Chinatown as a lobbyist about that project. And at the end of the day, they supported it because we showed them some of the benefits. A rewards program where people who got comps in the casino could spend it outside the casino, in the community. They actually support it. We didn't get the license there, but they came out and support. So again, it was that community involvement. I wasn't a councilman. It was not a quid pro quo, but a Councilman Squill eventually did support it because the community gave it the green light.
We have to end our conversation. We could go on. Frank DiCicco, thank you for joining us on Radio Times. Larry Platt, thank you for joining us as well. And do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.